Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei describes the normalization of ties between some Muslim countries and Israel as one of the biggest acts of betrayal. Forces of the Israeli regime kill yet another Palestinian in the occupied territories. And an explosion inside a mine in Turkey leaves more than 20 people dead. Thank you for joining us. Iran's leader says the Muslim world can claim its rightful place in global geopolitics through unity and overcoming the temptations of enemies, especially the U.S. and Israel. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said to have unity, Muslims should work together to preserve their common interests and thwart the plots of Aryan powers. The leader also noted that the differences between the two major branches of Islam should not lead to disputes among Muslims. He said there are extremists among both Sunnis and Shias, but have nothing to do with either. The leader stressed that those who inflame the sentiments of one faith in the name of support for another should be seriously confronted. According to Ayatollah Khamenei, the enemy is seeking to drive a wedge among Muslims by creating and empowering Israel. He warned that divergence among Muslim nations has paved the way for intensified crackdowns and atrocities against people in Palestine and other Islamic countries. The leader also described the normalization of ties between some Muslim countries and the Israeli regime as one of the biggest acts of betrayal. He stressed, however, that unity is still possible among Muslim nations through hard work and perseverance in the face of difficulties. Ayatollah Khamenei cited the example of the Islamic Republic of Iran, saying it stood up to former world powers, the U.S. and the Soviet Union, when it was a sapling. The leader said now that the Islamic Republic has turned into a mighty tree, no one should even consider uprooting it. Ayatollah Khamenei was speaking at a meeting with the participants in the Islamic Unity Conference, which was held in Tehran in recent days. Masoud Chajari is with the Islamic Human Rights Commission. He says unity among Muslims is the only way to thwart U.S. plots.
It really is now very clear for everyone to see that what has come in the last years as a result of policy of United States and the Western world, in not just in the region of Middle East, but everywhere else. I mean, look, it's very easy. Just look at Afghanistan, look at Iraq, look at Syria, look at Libya. You see that there is a destruction, total destruction of the civil society, destruction of the infrastructure, and what they have replaced it with is really chaotic and sort of an environment where it's not fit for ordinary human beings to live. And the solution is that the Muslims to come together. Muslims, in reality, are on receiving end of all these oppression, and they need to unite and they need to stand.
Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has decried the, quote, meddlesome remarks by French President Emmanuel Macron on the recent riots in the country. Nasser Kanani said Macron's condemnation of Iran's response to the violence encourages rioters and outlaws. The spokesman said the condemnation, that is, comes while the French government itself has threatened to forcibly break an oil refinery strike that began almost 3 weeks ago. Kanani stressed that the flagrant hypocrisy once again proves that many Western governments use human rights as a tool to achieve their political goals. Riots erupted in Iran after a young woman died days after collapsing at a police station. A forensic report has dismissed allegations that she was beaten up, saying she died due to an underlying medical condition. The Iranian foreign minister has criticized Western double standards in condemning Iran's response to the recent riots in the country. Hossein Amir Abdollahian says the EU never gives such a response to similar events in Western countries. He is urging European officials to adopt a realistic approach to the issue. Amir Abdollahian made the remarks in a phone call with EU foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell. The top Iranian diplomat added that the Islamic Republic enjoyed strong popular support and an efficient democracy. He stressed that Iran is not a land of velvet and color coups, In turn, Borrell assured Amir Abdullahian that the EU does not wish to interfere in Iran's internal affairs. Some EU officials have criticized Iran for its response to the unrest, threatening sanctions. Iran has warned of retaliatory measures in case of such a move. Israeli media reports say regime forces have just killed a Palestinian man in the occupied West Bank. The reports claim he perpetrated a shooting attack at the settlement of Beit El a few hours ago, lightly wounding an Israeli settler. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Candide, joined us earlier for the details. Here's what she told us.
Israeli soldiers who were in the area stationing around the illegal settlement of Beit El immediately responded and killed one Palestinian. They took his body, but the other Palestinian, according to the Israeli military, was wounded but succeeded to flee. They are still searching for the second Palestinian, according to the Israeli military. It's not the identity of the Palestinian young man who was killed by the Israeli soldiers is still unknown, because the Israeli forces unfortunately succeeded to pull his body, and the second Palestinian is still at large, and the Israeli forces are still searching for the second Palestinian.
In Turkey, an explosion inside a coal mine in the north has claimed at least 25 lives and injured dozens of miners. Interior Minister Süleyman Soylu also says 49 miners remain trapped underground. He says they are stranded hundreds of meters below the ground. Rescuers are working hard to reach the miners. The incident happened in a town in the Black Sea province of Bartın. An investigation is underway to find the cause of the explosion. Turkey's worst mine disaster occurred in 2014 when 301 people died in a blast in the western town of Soma. Moving on to tensions between Russia and the West, where a war of words is now escalating over Ukraine. President Vladimir Putin has warned of the global consequences of any NATO military offensive against his forces.
In any case, direct contact, direct clash of NATO troops with the Russian army is a very dangerous move, which could lead to a global catastrophe. I hope that those who are saying this are smart enough not to take such a step.
Putin was addressing a news conference in Kazakhstan. On Thursday, EU foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell said the Russian army would be annihilated if Putin launches a nuclear attack against Ukraine. NATO chief Jens Stoltenberg also said Russia would face severe consequences if it uses a nuclear weapon against Ukraine. Russia has said it will use nuclear weapons if its security, including that of the newly annexed regions of Ukraine, is threatened. While Ukraine has made recent gains in the country's Kherson region and the northern part of Donbass, there have been disturbing reports of reprisals against the so-called pro-Russia, quote, collaborators. Our correspondent in Donbass investigates.
The battered town of Obeznoy. I came here to find out if locals are fearful of the Ukrainian army, who have made recent gains not far to the west. A local school in the center of town.
Yes, we are worried. If the Ukrainian army comes here, there will be reprisal against teachers. But our strength is in the hope that it will never happen. I have colleagues whose children happen to be on the other side. They are afraid of coming to work because they are scared for their children and themselves.
Why do you think Ukraine would kill teachers? What's the reasoning behind that?
They say that we are ideological frontline workers and we are involved in Russian propaganda. This is the main thing that teachers are blamed for, but this region is 80% Russian speakers.
Irina, who's lived in this town all her life, tells me that she has heard rumors that teachers have been killed in Kapiansk, a town recently taken by Ukraine. This shocking video was posted online, claiming to be civilians in Kapiansk. It was uploaded by Maxim Zorin, a former member of Ukraine's notorious Azov Regiment, although he later altered his post, claiming the video had been taken from a Russian soldier's phone.
Now, to my knowledge, this is the only video that has surfaced in this war so far that clearly shows civilians being executed and dumped into a mass grave. Now, this video has been completely ignored by the mainstream media of NATO countries. Why? Because the evidence suggests a strong likelihood that these are Ukrainian soldiers executing pro-Russian civilians.
A headline from Britain's Daily Mail newspaper. The article quotes an advisor to Ukraine's Interior Ministry. A hunt has been declared on collaborators, and their life is not protected by law. Our intelligence services are eliminating them, shooting them like pigs. A humanitarian center. The Ukrainian government have not only threatened teachers, but those who distribute or receive humanitarian aid with jail.
We did nothing bad. We tried to help children and elderly people. What did we do? We were giving out aid under shelling. We helped people who couldn't walk. What shall we be afraid of? We just helped. I think there's nothing bad in it.
One of the volunteers asks us for a lift to help an old woman nearby.
What do you think of the Ukrainians threatening people who take humanitarian aid?
We heard of it. We even saw a video that in Kupiansk, some guys were taken into trenches and shot in the head. We have no internet, no proof. But they say there are nationalistic battalions that do it. It shouldn't be so. We are all people, Russian, Ukrainian, Belarusian.
While thousands of pro-Russians flee Ukrainian advances in fear, those that remain in areas taken over by Ukraine risk execution due to their political leanings. Indeed, most in Donbass expect a genocide or ethnic cleansing of Russian speakers if the Ukrainians were to ever reconquer the region. Zhonimir Rebeznoy, Donbass.
Britain's Prime Minister has appointed Jeremy Hunt as the new Chancellor. He will replace Kwasi Kwarteng, who was sacked amid market chaos sparked by the government's controversial economic growth package.
I met the former Chancellor earlier today. I was incredibly sorry to lose him. He is a great friend, and he shares my vision to set this country on the path to growth. Today, I have asked Jeremy Hunt to become the new Chancellor. He's one of the most experienced and widely respected government ministers and parliamentarians, and he shares my convictions and ambitions for our country. He will deliver the medium-term fiscal plan at the end of this month.
In a U-turn, the Prime Minister also announced the scrapping of plans to cut taxes for corporations. Truss admitted that financial markets could not keep up with government spending. Truss added that her government would slow state spending to reduce debt. Truss's proposed growth package left her own party members openly doubting her policies, with some politicians calling for her ouster. U.S. President Joe Biden has delivered his national security strategy. He has, again, pointed to China as the biggest threat to U.S. security and the world order. That being the case, the question would be, why does the U.S. take a militaristic approach to contain China, threatening global peace and stability in the process?
The rising rivalries between the U.S. and China are set to dominate the coming years in the 21st century. That is because the U.S. has unveiled its long-delayed national security strategy, where China is named as the most consequential geopolitical challenge for the regime in Washington. That means that Washington is prioritizing winning over China, as Beijing is seen as the only global rival to the U.S. Jake Sullivan, the U.S. National Security Advisor, said, "The People's Republic of China harbors the intention and increasingly the capacity to reshape the international order in favor of one that tilts the global playing field to its benefit." The U.S. strategy further insists that China represents the most consequential challenge to the global order. It also says the U.S. must win the economic arms race with the superpower if it hopes to retain its global influence. The strategy has warned that China's rapid advances in technology is aimed at molding the world order. The strategy is in line with the rhetoric pursued by the Biden administration and his predecessor. Biden officials have accused Russia and China of looking to change the so-called rules-based order.
When it comes to the U.S.-China relationship, the two have clashed on a variety of issues, but most, if not all, have been initiated by Washington. The two countries have faced off over trade, Beijing's claims to the South China Sea, Taiwan, and technology, and the U.S. has made it clear that it will not let China succeed in any of those areas.
The term has come to be seen as a synonym for Washington-led world order. The Biden administration has entangled itself in a number of global crises, including the war in Ukraine. The Washington regime encouraged the war in Ukraine by sending more weapons into the conflict zone. Washington is using the crisis to contain Russia. And by encouraging its allies to sever their energy ties with Moscow, Washington is trying to push European countries into its own sphere of influence. Furthermore, Washington is stoking tensions in the East Asia region by strengthening its ties with the Chinese Taipei. Back in August 2022, the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan, drawing an angry reaction from China. Beijing has warned that it will not tolerate Washington's meddlesome interference in its own affairs. But Washington's increasingly belligerent behavior in Europe and East Asia has pushed Russia and China closer together. They have forged closer ties in a variety of fields, including energy, business, and defense areas. Furthermore, both Moscow and Beijing are key members of the BRICS groups of countries and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Two bodies are playing key roles in shifting the Western-led balance toward a multipolar world. Russia and China have also forged closer ties with countries like Iran and India, which are emerging powers in the shifting geostrategic relations worldwide. It is now widely believed that Washington's ambitions to still lead the world is facing tough challenges. It appears that the regime in Washington has no longer the capability that it once possessed to dictate its hegemony.
And with that, we'll come to the end of this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Not a long time has passed since the election of Liz Truss as UK Prime Minister. Everybody agrees she's not made for the job. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media websites for further details. Stay tuned, please. Middle East Eye wrote, amid economic catastrophe, the British Prime Minister has no choice but to step aside, and the Conservative Party may never recover. Empty, devoid of content, leaden British Prime Minister Liz Truss has become a national joke. Her pitiful speech recently at the end of a dire Conservative Party conference leads to one inexorable conclusion. She's finished. And two unanswered questions. When does she quit? And how? The people who voted for her in the summer leadership contest were well aware she is a dud. They know this because they are already facing the real-world consequences of her calamitous premiership. Some are business people whose order books are falling because of Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng budget. Others have children who can't take out mortgages. While Truss was speaking, it emerged that the interest rate on an average two-year fixed mortgage has topped 6% for the first time in 14 years. Many Tory members are retired and understandably terrified for their future because Kwarteng's unforgivable financial buffoonery threatens pension funds with collapse. As Tories, they desperately want to believe in the government. But as citizens, they are now frightened because, like everyone else, they have to suffer the terrifying economic consequences of the most incompetent government of their lifetime. They don't feel safe with the kind of people currently running Britain. MPs, campaign strategists, and political reporters all agree that Truss is useless, cannot recover, and would lead the Tory party to a massive defeat at the next general election, which must be held by January 2025 at the latest. They know that in the case of journalists with professional relish, the collapse of cabinet discipline and the yawning split opening up at the heart of the Tory party over every great issue. And now assume that Labour leader Keir Starmer will become Prime Minister, though there is disagreement about the scale of his majority. Some speculate that the Conservatives could be wiped out. The Tories would win just 3 seats if the YouGov poll showing Labour's 33-point lead were duplicated in a general election, while others feel the Tories may recover a bit. All said that no recovery is possible without a new leader. Everyone accepts, however, that there can be no repeat of the leadership election that occupied the Tory party over the summer after Boris Johnson's defenestration. Such a contest, besides being a distraction from the business government, would turn the Conservative Party into more of a languishing stock than it is already. So there is talk of a senior party delegation warning Truss that her time is up. If she refuses to go, mass cabinet resignations would follow. Her replacement would then be chosen by consensus. This would break party rules, but water always finds a way to flow downhill. Sunak, the former chancellor whose warning of economic consequences of a Truss premiership has been proved spectacularly correct, is the likely successor in such circumstances. There is some talk of a stopgap government led by Gov or Defence Secretary Ben Wallace. Johnson will certainly fancy his chances of a return. Don't rule that possibility out. The majority of the party membership would want him back. For the time being, Truss staggers on, though not for long. The Conservative Party has been smashed. Arguably, it will never recover. It doesn't deserve to. Labour is now on the verge of power and is likely to emerge from this period of national humiliation and economic disaster as a natural party of government under the leadership of Starmer. There is every reason to dislike Sir Starmer's brand of politics and to fear a Starmer premiership. But it can't possibly be worse than the horror show on display in Birmingham recently. Also, Guardian wrote, commanding no loyalty with no winning moves, Liz Truss is facing her endgame. One of the remarkable things about the recent disaster of a Conservative Party conference was the extent to which MPs, advisers and other observers seemed to be coming round to the idea that Liz Truss wouldn't lead the party into the next election. Replacing Truss means unlikely, particularly given the recent circles of the last leadership contest. But even among those MPs who weren't champing at a bit for her overthrow, there were very few who thought the idea ridiculous. This is a dangerous state of affairs for the Prime Minister. It's quite possible to maintain a grip on the Conservative Party while being heartily detested by a section of it, at least for a while. Both Boris Johnson and Margaret Thatcher proved that, but when people's thoughts start simply straying past you, that's a bit different. How has it come to this? The satanic state of the polls is the obvious starting point. It would be a tall order to expect Conservative MPs to put up with 30-point deficits even in service to a project that they had pledged to support at an election, which in this case they did not. Beneath the dismay is a growing suspicion that there simply isn't a viable Truss project at all. The core of the problem is simple. In order to calm the markets, Kwasi Kwarteng has pledged to balance his £43 billion of unfunded tax cuts with cuts to public spending. Yet no politically viable path to cuts on that scale exists. Where can these cuts be made? A smallish haircut to every departmental budget doesn't get you there. What it does get you is lots of toxic little stories leaked to the press, such as a proposal to cut free Remembrance Day rail travel for ex-servicemen. This is exactly the sort of thing that is floated when government departments are asked to find savings without making cuts to their core services. Guardian added, gutting capital investment spending doesn't get you there either, notwithstanding that Truss pledged on the campaign trail to deliver Northern Powerhouse Rail. No, only way you save up to £40 billion is by making huge cuts in the departments that spend the most, such as health, work and pensions, and education. Yet in her speech in Birmingham, Truss listed ambitious goals for the healthy secretary, her close ally, Theresa Coffey. This means more pressure elsewhere, but a leader who doesn't visibly command the loyalty of her parliamentary party can't impose her will on the departments, which is precisely why Truss is currently on the verge of another major U-turn on real-term benefits cuts, which leaves education. We've not heard much about that so far. Kwarteng may expect MPs who have spent years fighting for a new national funding formula and better deals for their local schools to sign off on a big budget cut. We would like to be in the room when he makes this request.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and congratulations to you all on the blessed birthday anniversary of the Seal of Messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today also happens to be the birthday anniversary of the Holy Prophet's sixth infallible successor, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him. In honor of this day of double blessing, we have selected for you an enlightening statement from the Holy Prophet. I was sent by God to complete the best of morals.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Consequences of Disorder. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the consequences of disorder in the Islamic lifestyle. When we talk about the Islamic lifestyle, obviously we know that Islam gives an importance to the discipline, and it is against the disorder what people have in their life. From the consequences of the disorder, we can say that the consequences can be, one of them is violation of human rights. We know that when someone is have disorder in his life, he does not have the discipline in his life. Therefore, when he goes to the society, when he is having the social life, he might violate the human rights. He might violate the rights of the others who are living in the same society. And this is not a good thing. Obviously, this is something when we are violating the rights of the others, we are answerable and we are accountable on the day of judgment. Islam has given rights to everyone, every single person, and the society also has its rights. The people living in the same society, the trees, the animals, especially the human beings, they have the rights upon us, and therefore we should not ruin or violate their rights. And we need to take care of what we are doing. And therefore, Imam Ali has also said that one of the reasons that a person becomes alone, a person who does not have the respect in the society, is that when he does not take care of the rights of his brothers in the society. Imam Sadiq has said, "Tarkul huquqi madallatun." When someone violates the human rights, he becomes humiliated in the society and he does not have any respect. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of consequences of disorder in the Islamic lifestyle. And we said that one of the consequences is the violation of the human rights. And therefore, we must take care of the other's rights. For example, if I am a teacher, I'm teaching something. If I do my things properly on time and I'm not violating the rights of the students, that when they ask questions, I answer them efficiently. When they are giving a kind of exam or test, I'm checking them properly. Maybe when it's my lecture time, I'm not spending doing my personal things in the work time. Maybe it does not, like this point is related to every one of us who are working in different places. Maybe I'm sitting in the office. Maybe I am working in a garage. Maybe I'm working as a teacher, as a lawyer. I don't know. Wherever you work, you are an accountant, you're working as a manager or associate. If we are spending doing our personal things at the work time, then obviously we are violating the rights of the others at our workplace. And this is a kind of a sin, that I'm getting paid for what I meant to do, and then I'm spending that time in doing my personal things. That is another case. If the employer has allowed the employee to spend some time on the phone, or maybe if it doesn't matter in the eyes of employer, that is something else. That is a different case. But if they do not allow us, then I should not spend my time or waste my time when I'm working. Therefore, it is important to take care of the rights of the others and to not to violate. But if I have a disorder in my life, if I am, I do not have discipline, then obviously, ultimately, I am violating the human rights, and I should avoid this according to Islam. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
News, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type, and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to afloat. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants. A celebrated Chinese artist integrates his life experiences and the beauty of his homeland using his own distinctive style of traditional painting. Chen Jialing is known for his Chinese ink paintings. Chen brings to life the imaginative richness and culture through his depictions of landscape with every brush of color. He is most famous for breaking traditional painting techniques while staying within the framework of the art form. Chen says one of his favorite subjects is the Jianggong Mountains, especially during certain hours when the sunlight offers its own visual delights.
The composition of this painting is based on the main peak of the Jianggong Mountains, because the main peak is the most majestic and imposing, especially at noon. The sun shines on the trees, forming a contour light involving trees and the large mountains, which is extremely beautiful.
The 85-year-old artist has also used fused traditional landscape painting with modern technology. Though Chen has participated in numerous art exhibitions, but he says his first solo exhibit was held in his 70s, and that's when his career really took off. Chen says he plans to paint as much of his homeland's stunning scenery as possible during his lifetime.
Freedom is an essential virtue that is valued not only by humans but animals as well, just like two eagle owls that have been released into the wild after being born in a Madrid zoo. The two owl twins were freed after months of training to survive in the nature. First, they were taken to a big aviary to develop the necessary skills, including those for hunting prey. The aviary is designed to have a similar environment to the local mountain range. Meantime, they need to gain muscle and come to a suitable weight. After passing various skill tests, the owls are released as part of Madrid Zoo's breeding program of night birds of prey. 7 eagle owls and 11 barn owls have been released since the program was launched in 2017. However, some of them flew back seeking shelter as they failed to adapt to the nature.
On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats. A pair of baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Ershan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Ershan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Ershan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
An aircraft powered by electricity may still be some way off, but one of its types is already here thanks to a whole range of innovative solutions being developed by aviation firms. American company Aviation Aircraft has debuted its all-electric plane in Washington State. The aircraft, named Alice, took off the runway at Grand County International Airport and flew for 8 minutes. It reached an altitude of 3,500 feet before touching down the ground. According to the company, the aircraft produces no carbon emissions, significantly reduces noise, and costs a fraction to operate compared to usual light jets. The company says it continues to develop and tweak the plane's battery system for an hour flight.
We're targeting a design criteria of 35 minutes for a charge. And so that'll be a charge for the typical route length. It's actually, as I just said, it's actually a design point. So going back to the comment I made earlier about designing batteries for aircraft, it's one of the considerations is how quickly do we want it to charge and how much power do you want to be able to draw from it. So again, we're targeting call it 30 minutes of charge for an hour of flight time or about 2C if you're...
The company aims to find its way into the market for trips that sit between 150 and 250 miles, a range that features aircraft similar in size to Alice. It will also be for both commuter and cargo flights. For aircraft manufacturers, this paradigm shift is driving fuel savings in flight and on the ground, reducing carbon footprints and NOx emissions while also improving reliability and cutting maintenance costs. Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, 5 with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people.
In most of its habitats, the heavily trafficked pangolin faces the biggest threat from humans. But in Taiwan, these gentle creatures are exposed to quite a different danger, feral dogs. In the island, a government policy has led to a surge in the population of feral dogs. The pangolins share most of their roaming area with the stray animals. Plus, these scaly animals cannot move as fast as their attackers. When faced with danger, pangolins curl themselves into a ball shape, but the tail still remains at the most outer side, and that's where the dogs hit them hard.
Ecuador's Galapagos National Park is testing different coral replanting methods in an effort to restore fragile underwater ecosystems around local islands.
These corals are important because they are recyclers in the ocean. They convert all the CO2 into oxygen. These corals are important because they are refuges, nurseries, and nursery areas for some fish species.
Coral reef die-offs affect the marine food supply chains and are considered a major climate tipping point. The experimental project is run by park rangers and volunteers in a bay on Santa Cruz Island. Since 2020, they have tested how corals reproduce when they are placed on surfaces like bricks, cement, or tied together and strung on metal frames. They are growing samples in a nursery before adding them to bay. The rangers are reporting improvements with the appearance of new fish near the replanted corals.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The recent decision of OPEC to reduce its oil production has angered and concerned American officials, particularly the Democrats who are looking to win the U.S. midterm elections. The Democrats angrily announced that this decision of the OPEC member states, especially the U.S. ally Saudi Arabia, which is one of the main oil producers of OPEC, will increase the price of gas in America, which will cause dissatisfaction among the people and endanger the situation of Democrats in the midterm elections. Therefore, a large number of U.S. Democrats have called for the reduction of ties with Saudi Arabia, saying that in the midst of the conflict in Ukraine and the subsequent energy crisis in the world, Saudi Arabia has sided with Russia. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world media for further details. Stay tuned, please. The Bloomberg.com writes, the Democratic chairman of the United States Senate Foreign Relations Committee has urged the country to freeze its cooperation with Saudi Arabia, including most arms sales, after OPEC, in which Riyadh is a top producer, announced it would cut oil production. Senator Bob Menendez said in a statement on Monday, October 10th, the United States must immediately freeze all aspects of our cooperation with Saudi Arabia, including any arms sales and security cooperation beyond what is absolutely necessary. Earlier this week, OPEC and non-OPEC oil producers collectively called OPEC agreed on radical oil production cuts. The move in turn would likely lift up gasoline prices, thus increasing Russia and other producers' countries' energy revenues. This is while the U.S. has been scrambling to curb Russia's energy income, which Washington claims goes towards financing Moscow's February present military operation in Ukraine. The special operation has been seeking to defend the eastern Ukrainian regions of Donetsk and Luhansk population against persecution by Kiev. In 2014, the republics broke away from Ukraine, refusing to recognize a Western-backed Ukrainian regime that had overthrown a democratically elected administration. Menendez said, as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, I will not greenlight any cooperation with Riyadh until the kingdom reassesses its position with respect to the war in Ukraine. Enough is enough. He added, there simply is no room to play both sides of this conflict, saying Riyadh had to choose whether it distances itself from Moscow over the conflict or supports the military operation. The senator said the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia chose the latter in a terrible decision driven by economic self-interest. Despite finding fault with the Russian military operation, the U.S. has been providing unreserved arms as well as logistical and political support for Riyadh's 2015 present war on Yemen. The war has killed hundreds of thousands and driven the entire Yemen close to the edge of every countrywide famine. The United Nations has described the appalling situation in the war-torn country as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. On the other hand, high oil prices would also come right before the November 8 U.S. midterm elections, when Biden's Democrats are defending their control of Congress. It could push up gasoline prices in the U.S. ahead of the elections. The Hill newspaper explains more about this story, saying independent U.S. Senator and former Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders has called for the withdrawal of American troops from Saudi Arabia and an end to military aid to the conservative kingdom for lowering oil production. The Vermont senator tweeted on Friday, October 7th, after the OPEC bloc announced a cut in daily oil production if Saudi Arabia, one of the worst violators of human rights in the world, wants to partner with Russia to jack up U.S. gas prices, it can get Putin to defend its monarchy, he added. We must pull all U.S. troops out of Saudi Arabia, stop selling them weapons and end its price-fixing oil cartel. In August, the United States approved massive arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates worth more than $5 billion, amid criticism of their ongoing military aggression in Yemen, which has inflicted heavy civilian casualties. The U.S. State Department said Saudi Arabia would buy 300 Patriot MIM, 104E missile systems and related equipment for an estimated $3.5 billion. The missile systems can be used to shoot down long-range incoming ballistic and cruise missiles, as well as fighter jets. Separately, the United States will sell terminal high-altitude area defense THAAD system missiles and related equipment to the UAE for $2.25 billion. Sanders tweeted recently, Saudi Arabia's crown prince ordered the murder of a Washington Post columnist with a bone saw. Its disastrous war in Yemen has led to the deaths of 377,000 people and a humanitarian crisis. It's now siding with Russia to damage our economy. Our support for Saudi Arabia must end. Furthermore, ABC News website writes, U.S. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy called for a reassessment